Welcome to the Block Party Urine Spectacular Edition for the year 2009. You get me the same way you got me all year, which is through the iTunes feed, the link at the upper left, or the dedicated webpage at theblockpartypodcast.com. I'm sorry, that's blockpartypodcast.com. 2009 was a very big year in the world of reality competition and game shows. There were a ton of stories that made an impact, but these 10 were the ones that caught my eye the most. So I'm going to give you a countdown of the top 10 stories of 2009, according to me, Jason Block, from The Block Party. The number 10 story for me was Ben Silverman leaving NBC. Now, the Ben Silverman experiment was deemed a failure in July as Silverman left, or in a lot of people's minds, gently pushed out of his position as co-chairman of NBC Entertainment. The founder of Reveille Studios did not bring NBC out of the ratings doldrums. His lack of support for scripted entertainment and his emphasis on bad reality and the 10 p.m. Jay Leno show disaster got him the early release from his contract. What will be interesting to see what his next move will be. Silverman is a player that's really not a dumb guy. Where he lands and what he does will be fun to watch. The number 9 story on the Block Party Podcast Countdown is physically challenged contestants come out of the game show's shadows. Now, 2009 was a very big year for physically challenged contestants as a lot of shows took a chance and cast people who would be overlooked normally by the normal casting coordinators who are looking for pretty much pretty people. The Price is Right had a deaf person play the grocery game, and Wheel of Fortune had designated spinners for multiple contestants over the course of 2009. But two people on reality shows shattered the perceptions of what a reality show contestant can do. On American Idol this year, legally blind contestant Scott McIntyre finished in 8th place and showed that if you got the chops, talent, and desire that you can make it on a talent show. The person who shattered the most perceptions in 2009 was one Luke Donald. Donald, who is deaf, ran the Amazing Race this past spring with his mother Margie. Margie and Luke finished in 3rd place but had a shot to win the whole thing because Luke played the game better than most hearing contestants. He was strong, arrogant, and if not for a couple of mental breakdowns, could have won the whole thing. What I hope in 2010 is that more contestant coordinators give more people like Luke Donald a chance. They absolutely deserve it. And I hope that this story becomes less of a rarity and more of a commonplace. Number 8 on my top 10 countdown is the return of primetime to the show that changed my life, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? The biggest open secret of 2009 was announced in the spring as Regis Philbin was going to return to ABC for a two-week run in the summer to celebrate the 10th anniversary of the show's debut, which was August of 1999. While the idea was noble and pretty cool, the execution of it was not that great. There were many ways to get on the show, including auditions, video submission, and the return of the phone game, which gave a lot of people like us a nice remembrance of things past. But none of those happened during the actual run of the show in August of 2009. It didn't have the feel of the anything-could-happen moments of the original ABC version. Regis was very uncomfortable with the new clock and syndicated rules. But we did have history made on August 23rd, 2009, as Ken Basin was the first person to go for the million-dollar question and lose. Basin was a polarizing figure. Some people called it amazing television. Other people, including myself, called him, well, arrogant and cocky. But no one will ever forget him, and he is now the answer to a trivia question. You combine the primetime run with the new money tree in the syndicated version, horribly executed Tournament of Ten this past fall, and the announcement of the loss of the Phone-A-Friend lifeline on the syndicated version in 2010, and Millionaire Overall did not have that great of a 2009, and that really was sad for me. Number 7 on the Block Party Countdown is Project Runway struts out of court and onto Lifetime. The beginning of 2009 saw Project Runway in the same place where it ended 2008, which was in federal court and not on TV. But that all changed when a settlement between the Weinstein Company and NBC Universal was announced, which this paved the way for the move to Lifetime Television and the broadcast of the long-delayed Season 6 in August of 2009. The move to Los Angeles didn't hurt them too badly, but a lot of the show felt dated due to the delay. The show's moving back to New York, and its immediate broadcast of Season 7 in early January of 2010 will help them regain some of the luster which was lost due to the court delay of 2008 and 2009, which, of course, for me and all our fans of Project Runway is a very, very good thing. Fashion needs to be current, of course. Number 6 on my countdown is Jeff Kirby Commits Double Jeopardy. And for you as game show fans, this one just burned me. On October 12, 2009, Jeff Kirby committed the biggest sin of a Jeopardy player. He attempted to get away with being on Jeopardy twice. He had appeared on the show on December 8, 1999, in a fit of arrogance. He wore the same exact tie he wore on his first appearance 10 years ago. He would have gotten away with it if it weren't for the meddling kids of J-Archive.com. They caught the error and notified Jeopardy producers, who revoked his third place prize of $1,000. Jeopardy's producers were guilty of not being as vigilant as they normally are, but Garrett Kirby was the bigger fool. He took away a spot from all the people who didn't try to cheat the system. He made us as game show fans and potential game show contestants look bad. Thank goodness he isn't the norm, and most game show fans and contestants just try to get on the show maybe once. We're in the top 5 now, and number 5 for me on my Block Party Countdown for the top 10 stories of 09 is GSN's epic fail. Now, GSN's 2009 was an absolute horrific year for them. They did have successes, however, in Catch 21, Newlywed Game, and High Stakes Poker. They were nice, but the failures of GSN in 2009 were numerous in nature, and we're going to count them. The first one is the 2009 Game Show Awards, and this was a huge disaster on many accounts. You had poor continuity editing, vulgar hosting by Howie Mandel, and ludicrously bad games played during the show. But the biggest fail of the show was how the online voting component, which was, of course, heavily publicized by GSN, was thrown out at the producer's discretion. It wasn't about who deserved to win. It was about who the producers could get to appear on the show. It was also a vehicle to shove Big Saturday Night down our throats, which I'll get to in a minute. And let us not forget the hissy fit Bob Barker pulled to get Betty White not to appear live on stage at the awards show. At the time of the taping, they were on different sides of certain animal rights issues in the Los Angeles area, and Barker's legendary ego won out in the end. The second part of GSN's epic big fail was what we returned, we just talked about, Big Saturday Night. It was thrust upon us on June 13, 2009, which was supposed to be GSN's answer to the long-running Spanish-language variety show Hybrid Sub and El Gigante. The execution of said answer was the biggest mess of 2009. This unfunny, annoying dreck had Keegan-Michael Key, Ross Matthews, a.k.a. Ross the Intern, on The Tonight Show, and Charissa Thompson playing games for prizes in-studio and for home players. These in-studio bits were wrapped around two game shows, 20Q and The Money List. While these shows, 20Q and The Money List, which I'm talking about, were okay at best, Big Saturday Night sunk them fast, and by the end of the summer, Big Saturday Night was mercifully gone. Third, In October of 2009, AJ Benza was fired as host of High Stakes Poker and will be replaced by poker hottie Kara Scott in 2010. Benza took to his blog and ranted how GSN executives Barry Nugent and David Schiff didn't treat Benza well in his firing. And finally, GSN Radio was unceremoniously canceled on November 12, 2009, after a 15-month run. Its final broadcast was less than 24 hours later, which showed the lack of respect GSN had for the production staff, crew, host Marianne Curran and Bob Goen, and to the loyal fans of the show like myself, who supported it. The best show that GSN produced was thrown away like a piece of garbage. And if the first shows and casting notices of 2010 are any indication, GSN is continuing down the wrong path and not realizing that the roots of GSN were the game show network. Sony isn't going to throw good money after bad forever. People don't want to see hidden camera reality shows and stuff about Carney Wilson. People want to see traditional studio game shows, as we will see later on in this countdown. Number four on my top 10 list is Paula tweets her resignation from American Idol. While season 8 of American Idol had another 10% ratings downturn, the big news from this season was not the judges' save or how the new fourth judge, Cara Diaguardi, was not well received. The big news was Paula Abdul leaving American Idol. After the show ended season 8, with Chris Allen defeating Adam Lambert, rumors were circulating that Paula Abdul would not re-sign with the Fox powerhouse. And in an article with the Los Angeles Times on July 17th, her manager, David Sonnenberg, said, very sadly, it does not appear that she's going to be back on Idol. And on August 5th, she tweeted this: with sadness in my heart, I'm not going to return to Idol. I'll be missed nurturing all the new talent, but most of all being part of a show that I helped from day one become an international phenomenon. What I want to say most is how much I appreciate the undying support and enormous love that you've showered upon me. It has truly been breathtaking, especially over the past month. I do, without any doubt, have the best fans in the entire world, and I love you all. Unquote. 4 days later, auditions started for season 9, and a series of guest judges were announced for the auditions. But the news a month later that talk show host Ellen DeGeneres would become the permanent fourth judge took a lot of people by surprise. 2010 is going to be a very pivotal year for Idol as Simon Cowell's contract ends after this season. With him rumored to be leaving at the end of this season to start up an American version of X Factor, could the Idol franchise survive without him? What holds in store for the American Idol franchise in 2010? Stay tuned. Number three is reality TV gets criminally real. Now, most reality show contestants fade into obscurity, but these two contestants committed criminal acts that were so brazen in their boldness and stupidity that you were just left shaking your head and saying, what the heck is going on? The first one is Adam Jasinski, the winner of Big Brother 9. You remember him as calling autistic children retards. But he just anteed up and moved the level higher on stupid because he was arrested on October 17th, 2009 after attempting to sell 2,000 oxycodone pills in Massachusetts to a government witness. The big part of his arrest was the disclosure that he told police that he used his 2008 winnings of $500,000 from winning Big Brother 9 to fund the purchase and sale of said oxycodone pills. As of this writing, he's out on a $200,000 bond and has been forced to go into drug rehabilitation. But no criminal act by a contestant had more effect on the genre than what Ryan Jenkins did. Ryan Jenkins debuted as a contestant on the VH1 reality dating show Megan Wants a Millionaire on August 2nd, 2009. He was one of the suitors trying to woo the heart of former Rock of Love contestant Megan Hauserman. What no one knew was that he had murdered his wife, Jasmine Fiore, on August 15, 2009, and was the prime suspect in her murder. He was also rumored to be a participant on and the winner of I Love Money 3. On August 18th, VH1 canceled the show. He was charged with her murder, and on August 23rd, 2009, he committed suicide in a motel in British Columbia. In October, Collective Intelligence, which was the background screening checker launched a lawsuit against the company to which it outsourced the job of checking Jenkins' background in Canada. They said that it didn't conduct criminal background checks outside the U.S. and outsourced the job to the Canadian company Straight Line International because the apparent murder-suicide has caused collective intelligence to lose business. And the lawsuit is pending as of this writing. What this contestant did was not only blow up the VH1 reality show franchise genre, it sent a major warning shot to all reality competition producers and casting coordinators. They need to reform how they cast and check their contestants. Not everyone with a pretty face has a pretty story to go with it. They need to peel the onion to the center and find entertaining people with clean backgrounds to make their shows as fun as possible without any negative press. If you cast anyone who just walks in off the street, you'll get people like Ryan Jenkins polluting your airwaves. My number two story on my top 10 year-end countdown is Susan Boyle Shocks the World. No reality show contestant had more impact in 2009 than a 48-year-old single woman from Blackburn, West Lothian, Scotland named Susan Boyle. Her appearance on Britain's Got Talent on April 11th, 2009 blew people away in ways we rarely see in this day and age. She came on stage in a frumpy dress and big, thick eyebrows. People laughed at her and her dream to sing with and be like British theater icon Elaine Page. But when "I Dreamed a Dream" from Les Miserables came out of her mouth, no one was laughing anymore. The look on Simon Cowell's face was priceless. The video of Boyle singing made her an instant superstar in literal hours and has been viewed on YouTube more than 100 million times. She finished second to a dance troupe called Diversity, but we all know who the real winner was here. 2009 belonged to Boyle as she performed on a southern summer tour in Britain, an appearance on the final of America's Got Talent here in the United States, and the worldwide release of her now double platinum album, I Dreamed a Dream, in November 2009, which was produced by, guess who? Simon Cowell. The Susan Boyle story, where Boyle did get to sing with Elaine Page, was the highest rated special on the TV Guide channel in the history of its channel. But what the beauty of the Boyle story is that she was not another one of the thousands of hot-looking women looking to use a reality show as a stepping stone to other things. She was just like you and me. She had been singing for years in the karaoke bars of Scotland looking for a break. And boy, did she get one. Her story is universal, and that's why she affected so many people at one time. Now, the top story of 2009, the biggest story, in my opinion, without question, is Let's Make a Deal debuting on Daytime. There is no doubt in my mind that the biggest story of the year is the premiere of the first studio game show to premiere on Daytime TV since Caesar's Challenge left the air in January of 1994. Let's Make a Deal hit the airwaves on October 6, 2009, replacing the long-running soap opera Guiding Light. Light was canceled on April 1st and ended its 72-year run, amazing, combining radio and TV on September 18th. But what makes this news so big is how we got to that point. After the news of the cancellation was announced, CBS had ordered two pilots to be shot. Michael Davies was the man behind both of them. The one who made the biggest splash was The Million Dollar Pyramid, which was shot over the summer in Queens at the historic Kaufman Astoria Studios. As details of the show leaked to the game show community, people were salivating and called it the frontrunner. He also had a dating game remake in the pipeline. But word surfaced that a third pilot was being shot. In July of 2009, a pilot for Let's Make a Deal with Wayne Brady was shot in Los Angeles. Later on that summer, the pilot was greenlit for production on CBS. Brady and crew moved to Las Vegas at the Tropicana Hotel, and the rest is game show history. And for fans of the show, the 2003 NBC Billy Bush version is a distant memory. Wayne Brady, Jonathan Mangum, and Allison Fiore and the production team have executed a version of the show that new and old fans have come to like. 2009 has gone on to be the year of the game show. Many channels have successfully debuted shows, including Nickelodeon's Brain Surge, an excellent, excellent, excellent kid show. BET's Pay It Off, the Science Channel's Head Games, and Catch It, Keep It, two other excellent shows, and others. Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader debuted in syndication of fall 2009. Applications for game shows as a whole in this economic downturn have gone up as much as 20% for a lot of shows. And with the cancellation of As the World Turns and Bonnie Hunt in December of 2009, do not be surprised if we don't see the Million Dollar Pyramid on CBS in early 2010, and more shows in syndication down the pike. That's all for this year of the Block Party. 2009 was a fantastic year for this column and this podcast. I would like to thank all my readers and my recording engineer, Ivy Reiser, and all my listeners. A special thank you goes out to Chico Alexander, Gordon Pepper, and the staff and crew at Game Show Newsnet. They've given me the outlet and the voice to express my opinion about this wonderful media that we all love, and I know you guys too. I will be back in 2010 with more of the good and the bad in game shows. 2010 is shaping up to be a huge year, and I will be there to be covering the good, the bad, and the ugly. This is Jason Block wishing you a happy, a healthy, and a safe 2010. I'm at BeatTheBlock, twitter.com/BeatTheBlock. And remember, as always, don't just play fair, play to win. The Block Party Podcast is a production of GameShowNewsNet.com, copyright 2009. My recording engineer is Ivy Reisner. The opinions expressed in the Block Party Podcast do not necessarily reflect those opinions held by GameShowNewsNet.com as a whole. Some of the music provided for today's podcast was provided by the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com.